Welcome to the big show. Yes, oh, if only you could have heard the things that we've just been talking about. Bart won't be kissing anyone for a while. No,
I will, because I haven't had beer.
Oh, okay, there we go. We're here to discuss the big show stuff. I'll start again. We're here to discuss the big stories in tech that have happened this week. If you're into watches and you don't want watch rumours, well, you won't find rumours here, you'll only find fact, but I can't believe that we won't have watches up this week. And Satya Nadella has come out with a fantastic, stirring statement that I haven't got a clue what he said, because it sounded like a pile of bollocks to me. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, on the spinning line with no video, it's Bart Bouchatz. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing just fine, although I need to do something to make Skype not be stupid.
Like what?
I don't know.
Is it your camera? I think it's the camera. Well, you're using the C920.
It's a built-in eyesight, though.
Oh, well, no, that should work. Have you, like, updated to the latest version of Skype?
I just realized that Skype has decided to fail to install its own update, so maybe what I need to do is nuke and pave.
Maybe.
Have you tried turning it on and off again?
Repeatedly.
TIOBAA. Hello, Ian Grant, if you're listening. Yep, we miss you. You need to come back on here. That dulcet tone was Terry Barriff. How you doing, man?
Oh, very good. How are you?
It looks like it's sunny there in Scotland.
It is, actually. It's a beautiful day.
Excellent. It was beautiful yesterday as well, apparently. So, two beautiful days in Scotland after the other means that's the entire summer finished with now.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. Next to him is Ben Rothig. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How you doing?
Now, where are you from, sir?
I'm from the vast metropolis of Dubuque, Iowa.
Right, so it's flat there.
No, the rest of Iowa is flat. Dubuque has a 600-foot elevation change in about 10 kilometers.
So the only mountain in the place, and they built you on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, that's cool. Welcome to the show, mate. Openers, first one in. New boy, six of the best. And last but by no means least, getting ready to give us a song on the Joanna. It's Gazmaz.
Good evening.
How you going, bud?
Pretty good, actually. Busy at work, busy at home. Just come back from the Grand Prix.
How was the British Grand Prix?
It was fab. Absolutely fab. As you know, I went there Wednesday, stayed till Sunday, and just had a great time, really. Yeah.
Now, I've got to say, you tweeted a picture out with shotguns, and I go play pigeon shooting.
Yeah, it worked.
Well, no, I go play pigeon shooting. I saw the guns, and I was like, I'm fairly familiar with law for shotguns, and I'm pretty sure they wouldn't give you a license to shoot shotguns at Silverstone, but...
Yeah, we also tried a 12-shot repeater. So, and apparently you could let off the cartridges in 1.5 seconds if you got a quick enough finger.
So they let you shoot?
Yeah, there was a little event, because we stop on the campsite, Woodlands campsite, which is the official one associated with the Silverstone circuit. And they have all sorts of stuff going on. I mean, there's several big tents, and they have shows going on there, you know, bands, they have all sorts of stuff going on. And this event was that basically slightly off site, of course. And we did a bit of clay pigeon shooting with obviously the over and unders, and then this repeating 12 ball. It was superb.
And I've got to ask you, the new noise out of the F1 cars compared to GP2 last year.
Can I talk about that later?
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. Okay, there we go. That's obviously Gaz's story.
No, well, it's associated. It's not really my story.
The week in tech, what's been happening? So, go on, Gaz, start off then. Start us off with your stories.
I've got several stories, but the one I spotted, and I'm just going to post it into the chat room, is basically new electric cars. And I'm going to give you my cool thingy as well at the same time. It's not really. It's kind of see these here? See these things here? Can you see these? Everybody see this?
They're earplugs, no?
Yeah, well, they're now pointless. Absolutely pointless. I might as well just shove them up my nose, basically, because you don't need them when you go to a Grand Prix. Well, you don't need them when you go to an F1 Grand Prix.
Yeah,
because the cars are so quiet. They're actually as quiet, well, they're not quite as quiet as the story that I've posted, which is the electric Formula E cars have now had an outing at Donington. And they sound like, well, they basically sound like milk carts.
I was going to say, do they whistle and whine?
They're whistling what? Well, I tell you what The problem with the Formula One cars and the noise is it's just not loud enough, because actually the sound is pretty good. But you've got to kind of do this to hear it. If they were louder, it would be absolutely fine. And these Formula E cars, well, they might as well have those going around. Mercedes have tried. I'm kind of mixing between the two stories here, but Mercedes have tried to put some sort of horn on the Mercedes to make them louder, and it didn't work. It ruined the efficiency of the car, the performance of the car. So they've backed out. But yeah, these cars which are driving around, this commentary has actually made me laugh, because the guy actually asked the woman to put a helmet on, which just made me laugh. I don't know why. Perhaps I've just got a warped sense of humour.
But these things are seriously quick, aren't they? They accelerate as well.
The torque, well, I think McLaren have put their in their one of their road cars, haven't they? Because I know that Top Gear were talking about that before, and it's the torque which the motor can produce. It's so direct that they are just, you know, really quick off shit off a shovel, I suppose, is the terminology we'll
like to use.
Because
one of the problems that you've got is the top end speeds are kind of comparable, but the acceleration, the reason that they haven't integrated them into Formula One is because of the fact that they just basically wouldn't. And I'm just putting the volume up here.
Yeah.
It does sound like a milk float.
They do sound like milk carts. It kind of, you know, brings back memories.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool. That's a bit Tron.
Well, but you got to listen. Well, yeah, it is. But if you put that out on a racetrack with 22 others and a crowd of 120,000 people, you wouldn't hear them.
So that's what the new Formula E car looks like and sounds like, and it certainly is different.
Wow, that was...
The thing is that, but this is the future, isn't it? This is the future, electric cars. It's unfortunate, because the sound is awful.
I'm not wishing to be a bit negative, but I don't... the pace at which that was flying down the straight looked a bit pedestrian.
Yeah, it is a long straight.
It's like having a long milk round.
I've got to say that the race at Silverstone as well, talking about, because obviously there is an awful lot of technology that goes into the Formula One cars, and it does filter down eventually. But when Susie Wolf went out, there were lots of jokes about her not being able to reverse back into the pit, and I just thought that was...
I'm not hearing that on here. I get enough emails accusing me of being a misogynist.
You can send emails to me. It was a joke. I didn't partake.
For taking the piss out of Kelly. I mean, I tweeted out, you know, well done, Susie Wolf. She's bided her time, and now she's getting a shot in the car on the test race, so she should. And that's the way that
she's going to have another go in Germany, so, yeah.
Well, that's the way that What's-His-Face got in, wasn't it? The guy that got second. I can't remember his name.
Bottas.
He had a couple of rides last year, and he stuffed it in the wall on his second one.
Yeah.
He's the star of the rising star run quote.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when she went out, and I did tweet out and say well done to her, and a couple of people said, well, yeah, steady on.
I've got to say, when she was going around the track, she got a lot of applause. So, you know.
She got 1:44, which was a fair way off the pace, has to be said. And apparently she was in 4 years in one formula and only scored 4 points. So, you know, it doesn't look like she'd be taking over next year.
It's not always what you know.
But no, I mean, if she can put the laps in and she can put the times in, then give her a job.
Definitely. Well, absolutely.
She's got the.
I've got a feeling there's a little bit of PR going on there as well. But you know, if she's quick enough, then she's quick enough. I mean, Williams, not the sort of team that can afford, just to have somebody who's
her body weight has to be lower,
a dead weight. So,
no, she'd be lightweight in comparison to the rest. I mean, as a body weight would be lighter. So. Anyone else got any theories
these are now useless if you go watch Formula One.
So now, did you have those in at the weekend?
No.
No, because the V6s, I don't mind the sound. I actually quite like it, but you said it's very, very quiet in comparison.
It just needs making louder, really.
That defeats the object, surely.
Yes.
Because they went to V6s to keep the noise down.
Yeah. Well, this thing, it's not defeating the object, because they still have the Formula GP2s and GP3s going around, which are a damn sight louder, I can assure you.
No, they'll be next, though.
Yeah, they will be next.
They will be next. They'll go down next year.
When we was in the after show, they have a big, they've got a stage within the grounds of Silverstone, and there must have been, I don't know, 20,000 people around this stand. And it was, Christian Horner came out. And he videoed everybody. He said, right, I'm going to ask you all a question now. Do you like the noise of last year's car? Or do you like the noise of this year's car? And there was lots of boos and thumbs down. And do you like the noise, or would you prefer the noise for last year's car? And everybody cheered. And he said, great, we have meetings, he said, where we do audience participation and audience, you know, surveys. He said, and I'm going to use that as an audience survey.
Yeah, I don't know. I quite like the new sound. I think it's quite...
I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem. It's just different.
Who likes the new sound?
Yeah, yeah.
No F1 fans here. You're all sitting bored, aren't you?
I'm not bored, actually. I find it incredibly interesting that we now have real life size scale electrics.
Good point. Yeah, good point.
All they've got to do is cut the grooves in the track now.
I mean, here's the thing with the new F1 cars. With those turbo V6s, they're a hell of a lot closer to what you'd see in a production car.
Absolutely, yeah, the top end stuff.
But, I mean, you don't want it sounding like, you know, like in the... You don't want them sounding like a Mondeo. You want them sounding like a freaking Ferrari.
But you're never going to get your Mondeo to 9,000 revs and above.
I've got to say, the Ferrari's noise was the best of all of the sounding of the cars, definitely.
Right.
And before we go off this subject, Ewan,
yeah.
Can I just post in the chat room another race? Did you see the story about a seagull that photobombed a horse race?
Yes, I saw that this morning. It was Brighton, wasn't it?
I've put it in the chat room. I think it's brilliant. I love it. I love it. A photo finish in a horse race, and the seagull has photobombed it. Lovely.
Yeah, so did the seagull get win, place, or show?
It got second place.
No, it was second place. That's right. I've just got the picture up. Here you go. It's I saw it was at Brighton on Wednesday. According to the newspaper report, a 7:10 p.m. race on the standard track. An evening meeting was nearly won by the giant seagull. And he's beaten the number three horse into second place by a nose.
Yeah. By a beak.
Spot on.
That's my racing done.
I mean, is there going to be a world tour of Formula E?
I think so. Yeah, trying to put it together. They're certainly trying to put it together, but it's got to have movement.
There is. Last time I checked, there was a race plan for Laguna Seca. I think it's sometime in December. I'm not sure, but...
God, Laguna Seca's a punishing track. There's a lot of elevation changes in that track.
Mm-hmm. There are.
Yeah, plus you have that corkscrew. I mean, yes. The place is just wickedly awesome.
But it's not the place to gently ease a car in, is it? That's what I'm saying.
Oh, no. I mean, when it comes to electrics, well, number one, I thought they sounded like a giant RC car, which is basically what they are. But I mean, I think the motor technology is there, but you don't quite have the battery technology where it needs to be. And you can't, have them sit in for a 3-hour pit stop.
It's a 5-lap race.
Is that all they can get out of them?
I'm not sure.
Getting fairly close on distance. But it's all laptop batteries, isn't it?
They could always just change the battery mid-race. I mean, unless, of course, the battery's part of the actual car. I mean, yeah.
Well, the actual fuel cell in an F1 car is a big bag, effectively. The hole that they put it through, I went to Marussia and I sat and talked to the technicians there, and I said, how do you deal with the bag? And he said, it's like trying to push a melon through a lemon to get it into the car. But effectively, there's a great big void behind the driver where the petrol sits. And that if you fill that as the battery and then you just drop that out and put another one in from underneath, you could do something perhaps, because that's what they're talking about doing. But... But I mean, refueling, dangerous old thing.
It is.
I'd love to see an electric race, and I'd love to go and see an electric race and just hear how quiet it is, hear the birds tweeting at electric Grand Prix. But I've got to come out. I've got to do Silverstone for the British Grand Prix at some point.
Oh, it's superb. We have, I go for a long weekend. You meet up with all sorts of people, and I was meeting up with some friends there. I actually met an author. I was there. Somebody, a guy called Dan Dancer, who wrote The God Particle. So it's a sci-fi book based on CERN.
Oh, cool. Well, the bad news is, Gaz, that next year's batch is on the 4th of July. Which is, but I think that might miss the weekend because that might be a little early. It might have, the British Grand Prix might be further back next year.
I'll have a look.
Check the dates. Tell me the dates before the end of the year. But hopefully you can come to the bash next year. Who else has got a story for us? Go on, Ben, you're the new boy.
Well, this is kind of a small one because, well, quite frankly, nothing happened this week. But
mate, nothing happens any week.
Yeah, but apparently there's like some holiday or something. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Apparently, like, fireworks.
Don't mention it because it's about killing British. So let's pass over that quickly.
Yeah. Anyway, the $29 Chromecast. Right. Nice little device, but if you have an Android phone, you can now mirror your phone kind of a la AirPlay. I mean, that takes what was a pretty decent device and makes it really, really nice for $29.
Google Now lets you mirror, not Google Now, Google Now lets you mirror your mobile Android phone with your or tablet on your TV with Chromecast. Now, is that device, is that application controlled or is that open technology? Because some of the applications control mirroring, don't they, on AirPlay?
You know, there is an API for individual apps. It's also in the Chromecast app for Android. I think it's going to be soon coming out for iOS and, well, probably never going to come out for Windows Mobile, but it makes it a nice little update.
It does. God. Anyone got an Android phone?
Yes.
You have?
Terry? Absolutely. I've got the Sony Xperia Z.
And have you got the a Chromecast as well?
I haven't. However, I have a friend who brought one over to my house not so long ago, and I was actually really impressed. I mean, he said that his parents are using it. They're like in their 60s or something. We watched a video from that he was streaming from his house in West Brom to my house in Wolverhampton via his Chromecast, which I was well impressed by.
That is good. Does it make you want to get... I mean, you probably wanted one anyway, but does the fact that you can mirror small devices?
No. basically, I bought an Apple TV about Christmas time. And then a month later, I bought a smart TV, and I haven't used the Apple TV since, which makes me kind of think I'm not going to use the Chromecast either. That's kind of where I am. And I mean,
what's changing your viewing habits that means that you don't want the Apple TV anymore, though?
Just the fact that I can stream from the Mac to the TV.
Things like Netflix is painful through a browser and then into.
Well, that's it. The smart TV's got Netflix built into it, which is actually what we ended up using the Apple TV for anyway.
Yeah.
It kind of just made the thing redundant. And the fact that I haven't got a TV here in Edinburgh as well kind of makes me, you know, a little less enthusiastic about all things TV right now. I mean, that doesn't mean to say that my opinion won't change. And I will admit, I mean, for the price, you know, I mean, 30 quid, it makes a device that actually you could just buy on a whim. You could just go Chromecast. Oh, I'll have that. And, you know, and perhaps see the benefits there and then. I've got a NAS box at home. If I had a TV up here, plug the Chromecast in, you know, if I also had better broadband in Wolverhampton, I might be able to actually watch something on it. There are benefits. And I can see why people like it. I think at this moment in time, it's not for me.
Yeah, but I mean, let's just say you have to present a lot at conferences. Now that this thing can do it, you can bring this along in your pocket, basically.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things there, Terry, that I think is a real benefit. We have a guy named Chris Erswiler on, and it's not Erswiler, I've got that wrong. But he does a lot of conference presentations, and he said the hottest product at the moment is Apple TV. And Chromecast would be equally good for PowerPoint presentation and that kind of stuff. It really
is. We do use the Apple TVs actually at work at the moment. So, in fact, Mr. Wheatley a few weeks ago was doing a user experience testing group, and they were using the Apple TVs in order to do that. So, to be able to stream one screen from the other in the other room. It's quite an impressive use of the technology.
That seems a bit innovative for local for national government, mate. Plenty on. Chris Eschweiler as well. Erswiler, it's close. Eschweiler. Sorry, Chris. You're listening. Bart, have you got any comments on this? Because I mean, you know, what's the desire for you to own an Android phone so you can have Chromecast or have Chromecast or not have Chromecast or?
I have an Apple TV. I am. It would be very, very hard for anything Android to be interesting to me because Google can't offer the top to bottom experience Apple can. I'm just really happy with my iMacs, my MacBook Pro, my iPad, and my iPhone. I have no interest in changing because no one else can offer me the full widget.
Right. So, I mean, I wouldn't do it, I don't think, because Chromecast sounds cool, and it's great if you're into the hacking side of it and getting things like Plex and so on to stream.
Yeah, but if you're like me and you've just bought the Apple thing, then Apple TV gives you everything anyway, because anything I can see on any display, I can whoosh over to the telly with the click of a button. So if I'm on my Mac, I can send it to the telly. If I'm on my phone, I can send it to the telly. If I'm on my iPad, I can send it to the telly. So what does the Chromecast offer me?
It's an alternative to Apple TV, I guess, to a certain degree, but
a cheaper alternative.
It's 35 True. Quid, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
But having said that, I mean, the Apple TV's a lot cheaper now. It's only £79, isn't it, at the moment?
I think so.
I can't think that anyone here is going to switch away from Apple TV, though, are they?
No, I think if you've already got one, then is there a real need to switch over? Pose the question. If you've already got that technology, already got it there. And one thing I will say, I actually really like the little box. I think aesthetically, in terms of just having that on my desk or on the TV unit, I actually really like it. It's a nice little neat design, and it's just nice.
Mm.
It doesn't even need a power block, which is kind of magic.
No, I mean, it's USB, totally USB powered, isn't it? But is that affecting your range or not? Ben?
It shouldn't.
The power.
I mean, the size of the device might affect the range, but
it's only going to your Wi-Fi, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, when it comes to the actual range and power, it's just it'll work with basically any device that has a USB service port, and most of them have to anyway.
Yeah. Okay. That's I'm just trying to think. I mean, it's a cool thing. If you're an Android user, especially on tablet, then that's a really cool feature to suddenly get. But is it going to drive anyone towards it as a product? And does it open out to Amazon? Are they going to be able to utilize that? Because if you've got Amazon Video, Amazon Prime Video, then it would be a really good addition, surely.
Well, I mean, I think Amazon's taking the higher end of the stage, but I mean, if you have just, say, like a cheap Android tablet and want to use this as pretty much either just a really cheap way to have screen mirroring or to just mirror your device off or your content off your...
But if you've got Kindle Fire HD, though, would this still work then? Or is that...
You know, that probably not unless you... Unless you root the Kindle, because this is heavily reliant on Google services, and Amazon tried to pretty much get all of those out of their Fire OS fork.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that's my
question.
There's
probably some hack that you can do, but to be honest with you, I mean, I've had my Chromecast, and there's been times actually when I've switched back over to the Apple TV because the streaming's been better. But then again, I've had the opposite as well. So they've all got their pros and cons. The problem with having a Chromecast and Apple apps is the fact that the streaming or the streaming AirPlay is built into all apps, and the developer just has to turn it off. Whereas with the Chromecast, they've got to actually build it in. Of course, that makes a bit of a difference. But for the Google ecosphere, there's going to be lots more integration.
I've got to say that the Apple TV me and my wife are big filmophiles. We love our movies. And the Apple TV has taken over as our staple watching. So, yeah. You know, we'll either cruise Netflix, and I've watched Homeland, she hasn't, and she wants to. So I said, right, let's start Homeland again. Lo and behold, it's on Netflix. We loved House of Cards. We loved Oranges and the... And if we want to watch a movie, more often than not, we'll go and buy a movie on Apple TV. And we don't watch the TV that much anymore. The Sky Box is in danger. If it wasn't for the kids' channels and the sports channels, because I do love me cricket and I love that coverage, my Sky Box would be gone. If I could get the Sky Box only with just the kids' channels and the sports channels, take everything else off, it'd be gone.
I said to Sam last week, we need to get rid of the 3D on there. That was a whim.
3Ds.
We thought we were going to watch it and we didn't. And to be fair, the movie channels, I think we record things. The one thing that I do like about the Plus box that we've got is that it's got catch up. That's kind of it, really. Catch up. So, and it does have an on demand service as well. So, you know, I mean, things like, I remember when the new series Fargo was on, I could catch up on what I'd missed. You know, because I used to fly up on the Sundays to Edinburgh, I'd be able to watch it later on during the week or the following weekend with Sam. So, you know, there was that kind of ease of being able to do that that I couldn't do so much with the smart TV or the Apple TV box.
I was going to say, actually, well, my cool thing was going to be TV catch-up, because I've used it an awful lot this week, the last couple of weeks with Wimbledon. My little setup over here, I've got my iPad Air that's down here, and I can use that to get Sky Go, which is fantastic. But you want to try and watch live BBC television on an iPad. It's a painful, painful experience. And the best way to watch BBC TV on an iPad is to go to TV Catch-Up. It's not to try and use any of the BBC online services. They're crap. They're awful. It glitches, it falls over, you put it full screen and it freezes. It's absolute bloody rubbish.
Do you think that's due to the demand, though, the amount of people dialing into that single service?
Well, I don't wish to be kind of brusque in the response, Terry, but shit is a shit does, mate. You know, if I'm sitting watching Wimbledon and it's frozen with Murray on a tie-break just as he's about to serve, I couldn't give a stuff whether I'm watching it on Google or whether I'm watching it on iPlayer or whether I'm watching it on BBC Sport app. You know, they're all shit. Shit is shit.
I was kind of pleasantly surprised by, like, you know, we have our national broadcaster, which sort of likes to pretend it's the BBC, only it's decided to charge us a license fee and have ads, but we'll leave that aside. But I was really pleasantly surprised that they actually managed to make an app that works, and it managed to hold up during the World Cup.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm stunned, because usually we get these things all wrong. But I'm glad to hear we got something right.
No, that's excellent. Well worth the money, yeah. Well, the BBC can't. BBC, I was frustrating extremely in Wimbledon, I have to say. Trying to watch it on and off. I mean, I spend my entire life in this office editing. So my little TV's down there, and while I'm editing, a lot of the stuff that I do is fairly mundane. It's just I don't need to be concentrating too hard. It's just chopping up stuff into small sections. So having it on the iPad is fantastic for me. But the Sky Go application is great, because Sky Go on the browser is frigging awful, because it's based on Silverlight. And when you open it up, it comes up as a little tiny window and it says, right, do you want to make this full screen or do you want to keep it is? And it's like I just want it to be not 2 inches by 2 inches. I don't want it to be full screen, just not 2 inches by 2 inches would be grand. No, sorry, you can't do that. Well, how about, I'll tell you what, why can't I forward it? Why can't I put it onto my Apple TV and put it on the huge TV that's behind my laptop? No, because we've bricked the AirPlay out for that application, because then people would be taking it down the pub and putting it up on the big screen, and then we wouldn't get the extra fees, would we? So And I spoke. I, that's not a quote, by the way.
No, but you know that's what's going on in the background.
Exactly.
Right?
But I we had some guys that developed the SkyGo application that came to one of the Elmer keynotes, and I said to them, "When are we going to get AirPlay with the Google with the SkyGo application?" And in unison, these five guys that were there went, "Never." All right, okay, that's a policy then. Clearly,
yeah. I see content providers are absolutely no different on the other side of the pond.
Yes, there we go. You got it.
I'm feeling better about RTE yet again. That's another thing they managed to get right in the wrap.
RTE are well, there might be still bastards, but at least they gave you an application that worked during the World Cup. That's
right, they worked during the World Cup, and that has the giant big send to my Apple TV button, which, given the fact that I'm paying them a license fee, I sort of expected.
Really?
Yeah, I can send my telly to my telly.
Yeah, but I can mirror my display to my... I can mirror my iPad Air to my telly, whereas mirroring is disabled while you're running the SkyGo application. It's not the application that mirrors, it's the double swipe thing that gives you the mirroring choice.
Yeah, because like, there's an API that you can use to opt out of having your stuff sent over AirPlay, and obviously Sky have made an active decision not to do that.
To be utter bastards.
Which I think is ridiculous. If you paid for the content, surely to goodness you can watch it on any size pixel you like.
Yeah, well, it's like buying a DVD, though. You've bought the content as long as you watch it off that DVD. You shouldn't, copy it or got to watch it through the DVD player that you put that DVD into.
Yeah,
but Bart, you're making sense.
Oh, and that's where I've got wrong.
And all these all these greedy bastards, they don't like making sense.
I mean, my Apple TV is a great example, and I think the models, it would be really nice if they did it, but I don't think there's any impetus for them to do it. But if you've got a rental movie and you rent the movie and you watch it and you're like, yeah, that's a really good movie, I want to buy it, you should be able to get the purchase price should be minus the rental fee, in my view.
Sort of like complete my album and complete my rental.
Yeah, complete my rental, there we go. But I've taken now, because I just can't be... rental is £5 down the tube. So I now look at movies, and if I know I'm probably going to like it, I watch the preview, I've read good reviews, someone online's recommended it. Go to at Shite or Not on Twitter and tell us about your movie, and we'll retweet it at Shite or Not, and just put the hashtag Shite or Not Shite, and that'll get retweeted. The people that have put in put in movies that have put Not Shite as the hashtag, I've gone and watched those. I've just bought them. Stuff it, £13. We love our movies. We don't do anything else, so our movies are our movies. And we sat down and we've watched a couple of absolute doozies that we didn't know were going to be any good. And then there was the Grand Hotel Budapest, which kind of just broke the run a little bit. But thanks to Greeny for recommending that last week on the Mac Show.
That was actually the one that was streamed the other week when my mate came over with a Chromecast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all right. All right.
Oh, I'll tell you what really pissed me off. I bought Carrie, because I saw the original Carrie, I loved the original Carrie, and I loved the new Carrie. I thought the new Carrie was done really, really well. Well done. And I bought the new Carrie. It's only on frigging Netflix, isn't it? Less than 7 days after I paid for it.
Oh, I was just saying, when you say, £13 for Netflix. A movie, that's like more than a whole month of Netflix.
Yeah, I know, but we go through and we look at the films on Netflix quite a lot. But and we watch TV series a lot on Netflix.
Yeah, there's still quite a lot missing from Netflix.
We'll probably buy one or two movies a week.
Wow. I guess you do like your movies.
Oh, we aren't that's we don't have sex anymore, we just watch movies. good story, mate. Excellent. Terry, what was your story, pal?
Well, mine is actually a bit of a journey that I went on. It's a technical journey. From Bluetooth devices to Google, it's not Google, it's Android Wear, all the way over to Bluetooth devices again.
What was the self-discovery in this?
So the self-discovery.
Was it done in Tibet?
Mostly, no. Normally.
Was there a llama?
I can put a Bluetooth vibrator in there or something like that. I'd make it up.
Bluetooth llama vibrator. There we go. We've got a title.
I didn't say llama. Did I say llama? Let's stick with llama.
Llamas. I did. Go on.
So I've been looking recently at the LG G3, which is a really bad title for a phone, personally, I think. And I was just Googling around, and I came across this random link on CNET for random Bluetooth devices and things that now have Bluetooth built in. Sorry, I'm laughing because of what I found. So one of the devices is called WellCow, which is a kind of a little cylindrical device that the cow eats, and then it allegedly reports back the acidity levels of the cow's stomach via Bluetooth on the farmer's device.
WellCow is a limited company in the UK.
Is it?
Yeah, it's WellCow Limited. I found it.
Is that the Bluetooth device that I'm talking about?
It is. Monitor the health of your herd.
There you go. It's a thing.
Nice alliteration. The WellCow Bolus wirelessly monitors rumen pH and temperature, allowing optimization of nutritional management for cows to improve their health and welfare. What the welfare is, does it mean to get a toilet? Farmers can use the data to optimize the diets for their cattle and consequently improve production efficiency and ultimately the profitability of their business. Buy it now. I'm going to click on buy it now. Here we go.
Do you know what would be funny? Judging by the shape of it, if it actually vibrated as well, it could have a double use.
I'm going to slip one of these into a cake for the wife.
The one thing I read about this device was that correct acid levels result in a better yield of milk, but I shan't say that.
Yes! Yet another reason. Now, WellCow, when you click buy it, it says, oh, you've got to call up.
Oh, it's one of those.
Now, they're near Edinburgh, mate. They're in Midlothian. So you...
Oh, the EH25.
EH25. Now, dude, now, here we go. This is your challenge, because you are potentially sliding around for a bit of a barbie on Sunday afternoon when you're back in Birmingham. And I want you tomorrow to give him a call and see if you can pick one up to bring back with you, pal.
I think that's going to be his pick, the next cool thingy.
No, bring it back, and I will slip it into the wife's sandwich next week.
Does this thing have dimensions on it? Because a cow...
You're going to need to go to Subway if you're going to slip that in a sandwich.
Okay, I'll stick it in a Subway, and I'll give it to the wife, and next week, on the big show, live, we will monitor a pH level from this very desk.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, do they happen to have a U.S. distributor? Because they could make a fortune selling these to Wisconsin.
Yeah, because they don't even taste their food. I've got some law books back here, just behind the green screen. I need to check whether that's technically assault or not, but if it's not, we're in. There you go.
Does it come with some sort of thing where you can make it make noise to go and recover it from the doings?
Well, let's be fair, you're only going to get 17 hours worth of data.
Wait, is it designed that you use it once, or is it you're supposed to, you know, reuse?
You imagine the farmer pulls it out of a pat.
Seven stomachs, so, you know, it's... Oh, seven stomachs? Where do I get
four
seven
stomachs?
That's not right.
But it's only four.
Can you imagine you can imagine the farmer walking round with a metal detector hovering over all the shit until it beeps, and then he pulls it...
Tell you what, it's quite big.
He pulls it out and washes it off, and he gives it to the next cow. And the next...
That's
you imagine the next
sort of
cow.
Assume, right?
Yeah, the next cow's going to turn around and go... I hope that's... You know that's been.
That's there. Yeah, there you go.
Did I just call Sharon a cow? No, I did not. I was very careful in that whole little escapade, not to mention that my wife's a cow.
Have you seen the size of this thing?
Well, I've seen a picture of it, if that's what you mean.
Well, there's a video below, and the guy displays it. So I've paused the video at 19 seconds from the end.
Oh,
it's enormous.
Let's play the whole video.
Ain't gonna swallow that, you. Well, she might.
You haven't seen my wife eat.
It must be
Malcolm Bateman.
Five, 6 inches long.
A Scottish-based company that is bringing...
Yeah, if you ball it to about 19 seconds from the end, you'll see.
You probably, like most consumers, don't really bother about what goes in here and how it gets there.
You can show some milk here for the audio people.
However, for most dairy farmers, and
well, turn
a
the volume down.
Vet, it's a serious issue in terms of milk production.
It is. It's a great video.
Malcolm is getting really excited about this.
After calving, are likely to develop acidosis, and for subacute acidosis,
I can imagine.
To Asara, the incidence
is that way,
higher.
Then.
It really is about the size of a certain other vibrating utensil. Content.
And for some cows, it's a very...
How long's this frigging video?
Well, I said, scroll scroll
go to
the
about end, 5 minutes and 19, 19 seconds and you'll see
19 seconds and you'll see it from the end.
Hang on, let's pause it. 19 seconds from the end.
Yeah, and you'll see the size of this thing.
Holy cow! No, that's not it.
Yes, that is it. Cows are big.
Yeah, but even a cow's not going to swallow that.
Have you ever seen a vet giving a cow medications? Like, the tablets are the size of your fist.
That's it. That's 0064. That's...
The cow's not going to be well after that, is it?
Yeah, so I give my cow this well cow thing, and the bugger choked to death. That's a condenser microphone.
It has the ribs on the end of it and everything, yeah.
Exactly.
I've actually got one here, what, you see.
That is...
You've got a well cow to buy.
Why, mate? Road podcaster.
Oh, mate. Malcolm, give me a call because your video's shite. I'll do you a far better one. I'm going to get some work out of this.
God, that thing's the size of like a 50 caliber bullet.
Oh, and the rest, mate. And the rest. That's a tank round.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
That'd make your cow's eyes water, wouldn't it?
So that was the first leg of my journey.
Is it a suppository? Is it a suppository? You give that to the cow and the cow just kicks you and says, "Staff off." move along. Go on, so that's your cool thing, was it? No.
Well, no, that's not my cool thing, but I think it is now.
your mission is still to get one for Sunday, mate.
I will.
Get one so that tomorrow. I can brandish it on next week's big show.
I'll see if he can get it DHL to us on the Saturday morning. But the second thing. So there was a list of Bluetooth devices. The first two are pretty ridiculous. So the first one's the Well Cow. The second one is called the iPacifier, instead of called the iDummy, as we'd call it. But so basically, it's a dummy that measures the baby's health temperature and reports back to the device. I just thought, well,
did you know that iPacifier on Twitter is a bloke called Barry?
Really?
Yeah. Twitter.com/iPacifier.
iPacifier. Oh no, that just takes me down to CNET on there.
Although I've got the CNET article, but that's not it, is it? That doesn't look like it.
No.
iPacifier on Pinterest, the only time I've ever gone on Pinterest.
The Bucktooth Baby. There you go.
Is that it? No.
No. So yeah, that was the second one. And then things started to get useful a little bit anyway. So one of them was called the I don't know how to pronounce this, but the Oort, which is 0ORT. Which is basically a Bluetooth device that pairs on anything Bluetooth, and it's rigged up with your lighting. So when you leave a room and the Bluetooth signal's lost, the lights turn off. I thought that was quite nifty.
That's kind of almost an iBeacon-y type thing as well, isn't it, in proximity?
Yeah, kind of. And then, based on the same technology, was something called the Lupo, which was a security tag, which basically you put in or on a bag or something like that. And if the bag suddenly goes walkabouts and a little bit further away from you, then it starts going off, starts going beep, 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 and you realise that somebody's ran off with your bag. And of course, Bluetooth is about 10 metre distance, so by that point you're probably too late, but still. The thoughts there.
Well, everything's called the Oort on this, so it's the Oort Hub, the Oort Cloud, which is, of course, the Oort Cloud is the bit around the outside of the solar system, isn't it, I think?
It's just where the comets live.
Yeah. The inner part of the solar system. And but you can put one on your dog, whether he has to swallow it or not, doesn't say. But you've got your phone. You can put one on your keys as well, so it'll locate your keys for you in the house.
It's pretty cool.
It looks really cool. The only thing, my question I've got in my head is, yeah, okay, but how much? Did you get that far?
There wasn't any price tag on there when I looked earlier.
Actually. Yeah, you see, that's the problem with this stuff, is if you've got to ask, you can't afford.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, it's a big old brick.
You were just on the Kickstarter page, weren't you? What's their Kickstarter thing? That's usually a good sign of how much it's going to cost.
Well, their AUT thing is turn off all devices, AUT, on your iPhone. And the AUT is actually a fair old size kind of hockey puck. And they also do like a socket that will take your plugs, but that's also on your Bluetooth.
Right.
So their actual, their page, she's looking for her keys and it's telling her where they are. That's very good. If that's truthfully that easy. Where you just point the direction and you put one on your dog and it doesn't have to swallow it. And if he runs out and runs across Prague, fear not, because the AUT will say he's behind you.
And there you go. That's not bad, is it?
I'm quite impressed with that, I have to say. So
that was a good find. And then I got to number three.
Let me just finish off the question that you asked about how much it is.
Yeah.
$69 or more gets you control your electronic device via smartphone, regardless of their producer, will send you an adapter. $190 or more, a breath of fresh air, worried about allergy season, you'll get an AUT air quality monitor that will alert you to VOCs, pollen, and mold affecting your home air quality.
Wow.
Starter kit will get, once start building your own AUT world. Then get AUT Hub, find a beacon and temperature beacon. The rest is up to you. So if you want to start doing a lot more of these things, it looks like your price gets pretty rapidly vertical. And the top prize is $1,500 Ultimate Wizard Advanced Kit. 2 AUT Hubs, 5 customized beacons, 5 lamps, 2 AUT air quality monitors, and a T-shirt. The T-shirt would swing it for me, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds
But it's good. A lot. This doesn't seem cheap.
No, and see, isn't that the problem with this whole sort of networked house? You know, this whole idea of, you know, LED light bulbs and Bluetooth front doors and things like that. Is the technology still in the realms of super rich, if you ask me? If you want to be able to actually have a functioning connected household, I think you need to have a lot of money.
It's also still in the realm of we haven't got around to figuring out the security yet.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be a tie in the app, surely. There's got to be a security measure there within the app.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. The Philips Hughes have some pretty questionable security stuff. Password over plain text, all that kind of fun stuff.
When it comes right down to it, aren't the rich always the beta testers for the rest of us?
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. iBookery says, is this the Bovine Tech Network? G4 Gym questions, doesn't BT have a 10-meter range? Batwench says, ought to work well then.
Oink, oink.
Oh dear. It looks ridiculous, says Bronwyn. And Bookery's been out to get some potato salad.
Hmm. And just so he knows, I've put the price in the chat room of that bolus.
The bolus
we spoke about, £450 each. The Well Cow bolus.
Oh, Christ.
Well, hope it's reusable then.
We aren't going to get a sample then.
Maybe not.
carry on, Terry.
The
sorry.
The last one on the Bluetooth page thing was a modular smartwatch called Blocks. Which basically, sort of going into the fashion, the new growing fashion of everything modular, like modular PCs. But essentially, you can modularize this watch and put little extra sensors on there. So like heart rate sensor and, I don't know, thermometer or whatever, and just build it and put pretty much as many as your wrist will allow. So if you've got small, girlish wrists like mine, it won't work.
Now, didn't Blocks make a phone that was modular?
I believe so. I do remember seeing something. I did think they looked familiar.
Yeah.
I'll try and find Blocks modular. There we go. Blocks modular smartwatch. There's a Guardian article about it, which I shall paste into the chat room. I don't like the look of it. I'll be honest with you. I think that it looks tacky and plasticky. And I'm not really that interested in my heart rate either. Maybe I should be.
No.
There it is. So that's the Guardian article on the chat room for right. That one. So the journey continues on to something that I don't know why I wasn't aware of it, what happened or where I've been or if I'm the only one here. But basically, it got me onto Android. Where am I? I've lost my page. Here we go. Yeah, so that got me onto the Android Wear stuff, which, for those who don't know, like me, is essentially the Android, stripped down Android for mobile devices, not for mobile devices, for wearable devices. So in this case, a watch. So it's got a voice control. So basically what that means is what we do currently with our phones is if you turn around to your phone and you say, okay, Google, it will start listening and then you can say, I don't know, Pizza Hut in Midlothian or Wellcow in Midlothian even, and it will find it for you. But this one is now always listening. So if you were to say, where is Wellcow in Midlothian, it would just find it and show you on a card on your phone, on your wrist.
How viewable is that?
Sorry, go on.
How viewable is that? I mean, that's the one thing that's all the smartwatches have got in common is A, battery life, and B, the viewability of the screen. And I looked at the Motorola 360 today, and that's a sizable chunk of real estate to carry around on your wrist. So how viewable is that information, though, on this device?
These are 280 by 280 pixels. They're one point... Well, I say these. The one specifically that I'm going to kind of end the journey on is the G Watch from LG, which is 1.65-inch LCD IPS. So I don't know what IPS stands for. But it's a 280 by 280 screen. The actual dimensions of the device itself is 37.9mm by 46.5mm, and a thickness, which I thought was a little bit too chunky, is 9.95mm. Mm. So just under a centimetre.
By the way, that's IPS is inline plane switching. It's the better of the LCD display technologies compared to TN.
Okay. So what does that mean? In that it's better?
It means you have better viewing angles, better quality picture, which from what I've heard of these in the sun, really doesn't matter.
Okay. So when you say it doesn't matter, do you mean that that you still can't see it anyway?
Yeah, I've heard they're completely drowned out by light.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Mm. See, that's not good. I mean, especially if you are
on a watch,
you do want to find your way to Wellcow's headquarters. you're not going to be able to see where you're going.
Dude, I've got to say, if you can talk them into a sample by Sunday, they will get it back, obviously. Slightly soiled, maybe. Depending on what the wife's constitution's been that week. But
do I need to tell them that it's for human consumption or not? I mean,
well, no, they're going to get it back whole. It's fine. But if you can con them into one for the weekend for a review, we'll put a review up on our blog. Tell them it'd be great PR. We got a lot of farmers listen to us.
Let's do it. I am going to phone them.
Do it. If you can get a review unit, tell them we'll review it and we'll send it back to them. It's not a lost item or anything like that. Then get it sent down and that could be cool. I could be the reviewer of the year. We'll send it to Righty. Righty can pick it up and review it. He's from Norfolk. He'd know a bit about it. He'd find someone who can.
He can slip it into a cow. And we are talking about the device here.
Bart, what have you brought for us, mate?
I decided to continue my bringing security stories thing. So we have the bizarre sounding abusing Jason P with Rosetta Flash, which is a lot of funny words. But basically, Adobe have issued a security update to fix a problem. And rather unusually, it's not actually a bug in their code for once. They're actually helping out other people who've made a mistake, which is strange. So our web browsers, we're all using JavaScript all over the gaff these days. And one of the main security features is something called the same origin policy that is there to stop scripts from someone else interacting with your scripts and thereby stealing things like your cookies and stuff. And that gets in the way of certain large corporations who would like to have cross-domain scripting. And so a technique was invented to bypass the same origin policy called JSONP. And, well, as soon as you decide to bypass browser security, you've suddenly taken it upon yourself to protect the user. And shock and or horror, a whole bunch of really big websites didn't actually succeed in doing that. And so there were problems with JSONP implementations on Google, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, eBay, and a whole bunch of other big sites.
Wow.
And it just so happens that the shim that was used to exploit the problems with JSONP is using good old Shockwave Flash files, SWF files. And so what Adobe have done is, in effect, they've made some changes to Flash so that it can't be abused to break into or to exploit problems with JSONP. So Adobe are actually protecting other people from their mistakes, which is a nice change because usually it's Adobe fixing Adobe's mistakes.
Mm.
Now, the good news is that the big sites that use JSONP have patched their JSONP endpoints, so the Googles and all the really big sites are fixed. But there's bound to be a kabillion other JSONP endpoints that no one's ever going to look at ever again. And so by Adobe also fixing the problem in Flash itself, that's going to protect those of us, you know, that's going to allow ordinary users to protect themselves and not be relying on people running websites to have done the right thing. So all in all, it's important that we all update our Flash, and whoever invented JSONP should be shot.
So just to be clear then, Rosetta Flash is a translation tool from alphanumeric from binary to alphanumeric, right?
Well, that's one of the things it does. So basically, it's a tool for taking any arbitrary Flash code and re-encoding it in such a way that you can inject it in, you can use it to forge malicious JSONP queries, which allow you to stick scripts into other people's websites. And once you have a script in someone else's website, that script has access to everything, all the cookies and so forth, and therefore you can take session IDs and do sidejacking and all sorts of nasty things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just reading the thing here. It says making a victim perform arbitrary requests to the domain with the vulnerable endpoint and exfiltrates potentially sensitive data as a result.
Yeah, because you shouldn't, you know, a script from someone that's not Google should not be able to see the Google cookies. But Google have a JSONP endpoint, which wasn't properly secured, and therefore you could use this Rosetta exploit against it and use that to, steal people's session cookies and things.
I mean, apparently this is saying that this is not limited to JSONP only, though.
Well, no, because Rosetta doesn't do anything of any use unless you have a way of making the browser execute it, and the way of making the browser execute it was through JSONP.
Right. Okay.
You need the two ends. You need the two parts of the equation for this to be useful for bad guys.
But apparently Google's been vulnerable, and so is YouTube. As a result of this, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Ola.
Right, because they all have JSONP endpoints.
Yeah, right, okay.
So it's their choice to use JSONP is the reason they're vulnerable.
Excellent. Does that affect anyone else?
Oh, probably. JSONP is a technique. It's not a technology so much as a technique. And it's a technique that lots of people use whenever they run into, oh dear, there's some security in our way. Ooh, isn't that inconvenient? Let's try bypass it.
Bookery's pointed out in the chat room he did a Flash update the other day and it screwed up his notifications in Google Plus. Would that be part of this? Or
it may or it may not, depending on which Flash update it was. The Flash update that fixes this problem is Flash version, where's the version number gone? 14.0.0.125.
Great.
Oh, sorry, no. Sorry, people with a version earlier than that should update to 14.0.0.145, because that's just clear as mud.
Jufro Jim says, Flash should die, not Gordon, just Adobe.
I won't argue with that. Thankfully, Silverlight has been declared dead by Microsoft. If Flash follows suit, we'll all be better off.
Batwin says, was this an other person problem fix that came about by happy accident by fishing for one of their own faults?
Well, apparently it was discovered by an internal Google engineer who disclosed it internally within Google first, so Google could get their ducks in a row. Then disclosed it to Adobe so they could get a patch ready, and didn't announce it publicly until the Adobe patch came out, which I think is what you call responsible disclosure. So that was good.
Are these the people that work for a company who just deliberately go out and try and break things?
Well,
the deliberately go out and try and break things department.
I don't know exactly what this chap was in the security team in Google, so that probably is the deliberately try break things team. Which is good. An important team to have in any company.
No, good. I'm very happy that they employ those people.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know the bad guys are doing it. So if the good guys aren't doing it too, the only people who are going to find the problems are the bad guys.
Terry, does this affect the work that you do any at all?
Well, I'm just thinking about that myself. I mean, I don't think I've implemented anything to do with JSONP in anything. The last thing
you've got into ask covering mode immediately.
Yeah. Anything at all in any of the websites ever? No, but the I've never had a need to. I mean, the last job that I did, the last contract that I did, was for an online gaming company, and we developed a game for a certain gambling place, and they the game is completely void of Flash, completely void of Silverlight. It's a pure HTML5 canvas JavaScript game, and it's fantastic. The amount of testing we did. I'm not selling the game. I'm not actually mentioning what game it is, so that's fine. It really was phenomenal work by everyone involved, and we did actually have a cross-domain issue similar to what you're talking about. We just didn't implement what we were going to do. It was as simple as that. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I can't see a lot of reason, apart from the likes of Google perhaps, to, you know, to do cross-domain with things like YouTube and Google itself. You know, I can't see much of a reason to do that.
Mm.
It's just laziness, because you can reverse proxy anything through one domain, you know, through a CDN that covers half the globe. There's no reason in this modern day and age to be spreading your stuff over multiple domains and then having to hack around the same origin policy.
Agree. There's no reason. But I don't know. I just, you know, I think that they think they need it, and instead of doing things the right way, they've gone about this hacking way that you mentioned. I mean, with JSONP.
Interesting. My story was Satya Nadella. I saw an article this week on that I read. It says Satya Nadella to Microsoft employees: "We will focus on IoT, cloud, and mobility." And I thought, well, that's a good statement. I'm going to read the rest of the article. So I sat and read the rest of the article, and I didn't know what IoT was. I have to be completely and utterly honest here.
IoT has a meaning to us in Ireland, but I bet you it's not what he was talking about, because he doesn't mean institutes of technology, does he?
No, he doesn't. He means the Internet of Things.
Oh.
There you go. I learned something. I didn't learn anything, because I still haven't got a frigging clue what he's talking about. But
your fridge having an IP, your light switches having an IP. Actually, we're going back a bit here. That's the Internet of Things stuff, where you have your lights talking to your phone and all that.
Okay. Well, why didn't you just say that then? Mobility and cloud as its endeavours, which is great. That's a lovely statement. But then he said, Microsoft will focus on providing digital work and digital life experiences for its customers, according to the letter. The foundation of these experiences will be centered on connecting sensors, screens, and devices. We will create a more natural human computing interface that will empower all individuals. And then he went on to say, productivity for us goes well beyond documents, spreadsheets, and slides. We'll reinvent productivity for people who are swimming in a growing sea of devices, apps, data, and social networks.
There's no meaning yet. I've heard a lot of words.
The thing that struck me about that story is not the fact that I'm like Satya Nadella grasping hold of the reins. He stood there and he's asking everyone what the frigging reins look like. The last thing that Microsoft needs is some whiffly waffly bullshit like that. It needs a leader. And I'm really pissed
bullshit,
off.
Bingo, you'd be pissed now.
Oh, mate, I'd have shouted house a minute ago. And Satya Nadella would have given me an IP for it. The frustration overwhelmed me as I read that article. I'm not a Windows user. I'm a Mac user through and through. I will not go from Mac for a very long time yet, but I'm a Windows Phone user. I love my Windows Phone. I'm getting close to saying I don't believe that in the near future I will ever go back to iOS for a phone. I am that happy with my Windows Phone. They keep the camera quality up, and they keep the action of the OS running the way that it does, and the availability of apps that are currently there, and I'm very, very happy. But Microsoft cannot deal with someone talking absolute bollocks like that. comment.
Well, Ewan, if you want to cheer yourself up a little bit, you may have talked about it last week on the show, but like there is some stuff leaking out about Windows 9, and they're talking really, really sensible things like if there's a keyboard and mouse, default to the desktop interface. If there's only a touchscreen, default to the touch interface.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not, you know, there is some progress under Nadella. It's not, he's not Bomber, right? However imperfect he is, he's not Bomber.
He's not, but I just can't.
He is the man behind OneDrive and the actual things Google do well.
No, you mean Microsoft.
Sorry, Microsoft, Google. Yeah, they all did not have.
That's a Freudian slip right there. I am
heavily because the two. Actually, no, we shouldn't compare the two of them because they are two quite different companies.
You could just see Satya Nadella just sit down and he goes, "I could never have been more happy to have been head of Google. I mean Microsoft.
I mean Microsoft."
No, under his leadership, like Microsoft's cloud services are fantastic, and a colleague of mine went to a Microsoft presentation recently, and he was blown off his feet when a Microsoft engineer stood in front of a slide that said, "We support the following," and there was a giant big Linux penguin behind him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that is the department headed up by Nadella. That's his new thinking. So I still have hope, even if he does play a little bit of the bullshit bingo.
Okay. All right. But I just don't think that the market needs him to be like that either. I mean,
which market are you talking about there, Ewan?
The enterprise market.
I'm talking about the stock market. That was obvious, that was all corporate stock market speak, wasn't it?
You reckon?
Had to be.
They were all going bullshit bingo at the same time, weren't they?
Well, yeah.
No, they love that stuff. That's why they hate Apple, because Apple don't play that game.
Ben, you got something to say.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you just say what everybody, you know, was going to take out of it. You know, I was the cloud, the enterprise cloud king, and guess what we're going to focus on? Exactly what my former department was.
Yeah. Well, okay. Definitely. I mean, would SharePoint be one of his babies as well?
SharePoint is a very legacy product that happens to be wrapped up in his department, but I don't think you could blame him for that.
But that works.
Oof. For a given definition of work?
No, I've come across it a couple of times now when I've been given a Windows laptop by a firm that have said, "We want you to upload stuff using SharePoint." And it works. I enjoy it.
Well, they'd implemented that SharePoint properly then, because if SharePoint, you've got to put a lot of work in to get SharePoint working properly.
Oh, it's painful.
Really? Because I've only seen and heard good things about SharePoint.
we should introduce you to some people we know.
Well, maybe, I don't know.
You and people talk. People I know talk about SharePoint in the same way people talk about Lotus Notes.
I like Lotus Notes.
I never used Lotus
really?
Notes.
There's
I never used
one.
It. I never used it. But no, I mean, the thing, if you look at the cloud sharing activities of iWork, in inverted commas, whatever that is that's left over, that's horrific in comparison of sharing and checkout, check-in of documents. If you're using it as a document repository for document control and for version control and for uploading and sharing video and images and that kind of stuff, it's fantastic from what I've seen.
The concept is, the use is, and actually, I agree with you. I don't like SharePoint. I don't like the SharePoint platform. However, the premise of the way that all works and everything you're saying is right to me. You know, I do like that.
That bit of it does just work.
Yeah.
If it's been well configured,
it's
right.
What they're doing with the new 365 as well.
They're doing what with the new 365? Sorry.
So, Office 365 is basically SharePoint.
Right.
I used it. I actually I got a trial for Sam's, my partner's dad, just before Christmas, and I installed the trial and I tried it out, and it was basically like SharePoint. So using 365 online as opposed to downloading it, so Office on the cloud essentially, and it just everything just reminded me of SharePoint, and I like it. I mean, in terms of an organizational use, you know, they need to start using it more. From what I remember, people like Adobe have something else that's, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the same kind of thing, but for content editing of websites. But there's a lot of a lot of things out there that are very similar. However, in terms of an actual office use and organizational use, yeah, I think SharePoint is probably one of the best. I just don't like it because I had to build a SharePoint website once upon a time, and it was just covered in tables everywhere.
Mm.
Just, I say once upon a time, that was fairly recently as well.
It's technology with a fair bit of historical baggage.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Fair point. I mean, I think the stuff that I've come across it for is extremely simplistic, but what it does very well. And it certainly does it far better than Apple did do iWork, although I've got to say I shared a keynote with a guy the other day, and that was really good. That was a very pleasant experience. Just sent me a link, I clicked the link, and then all of a sudden both of us are editing the document. Very well.
The thing is, though, Apple are trying to solve a very different problem to what Microsoft are trying to solve with SharePoint.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft are trying to provide a solution for an organization of millions. Apple are trying to provide solutions for families or, you know, groups of five or six people or whatever.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, no, because Apple don't claim they're providing a corporate solution. No Apple person has ever said, implement iWork as your corporate-wide way of sharing information. Because if they did, they'd be laughed out of town.
Okay, but I mean, but I do think they're looking for a wider expose there in design companies and that kind of stuff. I don't think they're looking for multinational corporations, you know, at the kind of IBM level to start sharing documents with 1,000 users. It is small business.
No, Microsoft are pushing SharePoint to large organizations. I've been on the receiving end of one of their sales pitches recently. They're pushing it hard for large organizations, making the point that they use it for their millions and millions of employees.
Okay. Yeah,
I got the sales pitch just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, but I just...
And we didn't even ask for a sales pitch on SharePoint. We asked for a sales pitch on Office 365 and said that the one thing we weren't interested in was SharePoint, and the guy spent an hour trying to convince us we were wrong.
Well, no, he's an idiot then. Fair enough, but...
Because we wanted to learn about the other stuff. And they've sort of been squeezed in at the end of the meeting.
No,
anyway,
he's an idiot then. But, I mean, it's the Apple stuff, I think... If you've got one or two people sharing the document, I think it probably works really, really well, which supports what you're saying. But I think they'd be looking for more expanded teams where you've got a sales team of 10 people, say, or something like that, where they want to share their documents rather than sharing that document with the entire company. It's a departmental interaction process rather than corporate interaction process, is what my feeling was of it.
For SharePoint?
No, for...
Oh, right, sorry, for Apple. Yeah, no, completely. Yeah. Well, I think Apple are more interested in you sharing with yourself. That's Apple's primary focus, is all of your stuff on all of your screens without you having to do anything.
Okay. I'm not saying they've achieved it, but I'm saying that's their...
That's what iCloud is working towards.
I'll wait to see. Wait to see.
It's getting closer.
Anyway, the fact remains. Satya, stop the bullshit. Talk sense. Yes. Speak English, boy.
Just on the same subject, why not just use SVN or some kind of Git repository or something like that? I mean, it does the same thing.
Yeah,
I was going to say GitHub for the win. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Lovely. Thanks, mate. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by the Network Union. The Network Union, if you work in a large IT organization, then they help you with BT, MPLS, WAN, SIP, Ethernet connectivity, the whole lot. If you're a BT customer or not, it doesn't matter. All you've got to do is you can either sign up using Network Union, or you can transfer over to your existing account to the Network Union. Nothing changes. You've got the same contracts, you've got the same support. All that happens is your account management goes over to Network Union to help resign your contract within a different area of BT. If you're a small to medium enterprise, like I am, then even they can help you with that, because they do business broadband, they check out fiber upgrades, what you can get in your local area, call packages. BT Office 365 and everything everywhere mobile is supported as well as. So bundle it all together, get great savings, and you should be very happy. Go to britishjetnetwork.com/sponsors, click on the Network Union logo, and just put in your email address. They will only use that email to contact you back. They won't start selling it on or spamming you, I promise you. And all of the American listeners switch off at this point, but fear not, because if you're with Masergy, who are based out of Dallas, then Network Union can help you. Give them a call, see what they can do for your MPLS WAN and network with you in the US as well as. Same kind of deal. Check them out. Go to them. They know more about it than I do. I'm just an idiot who just reads out what they tell me to read out. But go and see them. They're brilliant. Excellent. And UK2.net are the other people that support us. They are brilliant. They've kept all the bandwidth for the last 4 years. We've only been going for 5 years, and we'd be lost without them. They've got a server for us, which has got unlimited storage. You can watch every show we've ever produced right the way back into the Bagel Tech days. It's all on the server. It never goes away. It never changes. You'll find it all, and you can watch it all. And they give us unlimited bandwidth as well. So no matter how many shows we end up getting downloaded, they'll still support us. It's never fallen over. And I've got to say, we had a little issue because our server's still registered with the old domain name that we purchased. And that came up for expiry, and I didn't clock it. So I actually renewed it at the very last second. And we had a little blip where we went off, and I rang up and said, oh, we've just gone off. And they said, no, no problem. And 30 minutes later, it was all resolved and it was gone. The support is second to none at UK2. And everyone can say, oh, I got one egg from Safeway or from Sainsbury's, and it was cracked when I opened it up. Out of all the 1,000 eggs I bought that year, everyone can say that. But I'm telling you, the other 999 eggs weren't broken, and these guys are brilliant. Their support is top hole, above and beyond, Paul Wheatley says, and he's got everything that he does through them. So they are very, very good. Please do support.
I've got clients with them as well.
So you should have, mate, because they're absolutely brilliant. Top hole. Make sure that you get BTN as the link when you log in, mate. Go through our sponsors page, and then we'll get the kudos for your account as well as. And Patreon.com. If you're a supporter of this network and a fan of this network, and you want to give us a bit of a shot in the arm, then Patreon's the way to do it. Patreon.com/British Tech Network. That's Patreon. You can give us $1. You can give us $10. You can give us $25. Or you can give us $100, as one person does. Thank you very much. What that gives you is the ability to say, well, you know, we want you to help improve. We want you to carry on, you know, improving the studio. We're in a great studio now. We've got green screen behind us. We've got a nice effect. The Keen effect is starting to disappear. I've got a new lighting rig that's going up next week. And Paul Wheatley is doing the Pocket Show and the Gamer Show from his new premises when he gets in them on the 1st of August. So all of that has come from the Patreon donations. So please, please, please support us. It does mean a huge difference to us. None of us make any money from this. There is no profit goes in anyone's pocket whatsoever. The money that you send us will go into buying equipment to make the shows better for you to watch and hear them, I promise you. We won't do anything else with it. So patreon.com/British Tech Network if you possibly can. Thank you very much. Right then, cool things. Start us off, Bart.
Okay, not technically terribly exciting, but to me, very important. I have really, really, really picky taste in headphones, like spectacularly so. Wow. And I had a pair for 5 years and they were wonderful, and then I snapped the lead off them the other day. So I then had to start the mad rush to replace them, and I managed to find ones that were just as good. So basically, my thing is I need my headphones when I'm cycling, so I can't have anything that dangles down. It has to be a neck band, otherwise it's going to fall out of my ears. I can't stand these rubber gasket things they expect you to shove in your ear these days. Mm. And I don't want something that covers my ears, because then I get run over when I'm cycling. Mm. And I need controls for my iPhone. So when you put all of those constraints into place, I basically managed to find one company that made a headphone that was perfect for me, which was Sennheiser. And it's the PMX685i, the I meaning for the iPhone. So it has your three buttons you expect. And it's just the old-fashioned goes sort of in your ear, but not like right in your ear, like the new rubbery gasket ones. Neck band, and it has the controls. It's a bit purple, which is not ideal. But the recommended retail price on them is $80, which is a lot. But if you do a little bit of looking around, you'll get them for much less. I paid €49 for mine. And I'm delighted, because they're every bit as good as the ones I stupidly broke earlier in the week.
We can't talk about Sennheiser positively enough. They are absolutely stunning. They gave us the microphone that I've got here at Macworld for our little Heath Robinson rig to make sure we could get all those interviews and stuff with you. So Sennheiser, USA.
I'm impressed with them as well. My last headphones were the Amperias, and although they were massive and they're about £250, I didn't get them for £250. I got them for remarkably cheaper. However, they sound like they're £1,000. They're beautiful.
I've had nothing but Sennheisers for years, and they've never let me down. The only thing that's gone wrong with them is that I've broken them.
Yeah, but, absolutely. My first set of Sennheisers were HD 40s, and they were just superb.
I think the thing I like about Sennheiser is they do a range of headphones. They don't do bend over, here it comes headphones, where you know all they're doing is taking your, you know, whilst they're giving you it up the backside, they're taking your wallet out your pocket. Beats.
I was just about to say, so not that company Apple bought recently.
Beats. Sorry about that. But Sennheiser do a range. And for £50, for £40, fantastic earphones. And if you want to spend the 200 pluses, you can do, and you get incredible earphones, but you can get a really good quality set of earphones. And someone said this week about noise cancelling earphones, and they bought some Bose over-ear noise cancelling earphones, and I said, well, over-ear noise cancellation is crap. What you need to do is do in-ear, and to be honest, some of the best, my skull candies that cost me £15, they were probably the best earphones I've had. The only reason I don't use them anymore is because I lost the little rubber grommety things on them.
Things I hate so much.
Paul Wheatley recommended the Plantronics ones that have got the blue, that are the wireless ones, the Bluetooth wireless ones. Absolutely brilliant.
I saw him sporting
superb,
those today.
Superb headphones. Can't recommend them enough. Great
the
pick,
best,
mate.
The best in ear headphones I've had is the Shure EC2s, but I don't think they make those anymore.
No. Keep them then, mate. Collector's item. good pick, mate. I'm definitely with you on that. Sennheiser are spot on in my book. They've got the right business ethic. Terry, we've lost your video, but that's okay.
I'm here. I'm alive.
No, we've lost your video, yeah. So.
Do you want to see me for the last few minutes or not?
Just give us your pick, mate.
There you go. Okay, sorry, mate. The pick is actually sticking on the sound thing. Something I bought this week is called the Kit Sound Boom Evolution 2.1 sound system. So we were looking for an iPod dock for Sam, and we came across this thing, and I assumed that it was a... have you lost me again?
No, we're here. Carry on.
Okay. I assumed that it was going to be this small little piddly dock, and I was wrong. It's huge. However, it's amazing. It's £150. So it's not a whim purchase. I looked at the reviews, and I tell you what, it's really good. It connects to your device Bluetooth. It's got aux input output, and it's actually quite a nice design, I've got to say. And the sound from it is just booming. It's beautiful.
Designed in the UK, according to the video.
Yes, that's correct.
2 years in the making, though. 2 years in the making, no. 50 watts with a 6.5-inch speaker.
The previous one, it's very similar design to the previous one, only this one looks a little bit more modern and it doesn't have the actual physical docking station in there. I don't know, I mean, I kind of like the predecessor in that it looks a little bit more classic. Mm. However, I am happy with this purchase.
Excellent. We like it. I think I found a video on YouTube, but I forgot the right one or not, but never mind. Excellent. Gaz, what have you got for us? I don't know where Ben's gone. He just dropped off the call and we haven't seen him since.
Yeah, so. I think his ISP went down. I think I've seen him comment on that, saying ISP went down.
Bad luck, Ben.
Charging lots of USB devices these days can be a bit of a nightmare. This is not a hub. It's basically a charger. I didn't get mine from Amazon, but it's the best link I can find, which I'll tweet into the chat room. It's this device here. It's the Anker 40-watt 5-port. It's basically the size of a deck of cards, as you can see here. It's just superb. It's really useful if you're going away somewhere, especially. But actually, if you've got lots of USB devices you need charging, you don't want lots of plugs going into your outlet. This makes it really easy. You just plug this into your wall socket somewhere and you've got five, and it'll charge. I've got the details here. It's got 2.4 amps per port, so and it's a 40 watt unit, so it'll charge, you know, all of those high drainage devices that you've got really easily. It's superb. It is £19.99 on Amazon at the moment, so I'll just stick that in the chat room.
The RRP on that is £50.
Sorry?
The RRP on that is £50.
Yes, correct. But it's been that price for some time, actually. So I would say that you're fairly safe. You should be able to get that for that price. You don't have to rush out, because I have seen it that price for some little while now.
I think Darren Griffin recommended that on the Pocket Show last night.
I think he did. I saw that tweet earlier, actually, yes. And yeah. I thought, damn, I think I'm copying him. But actually...
No, that's fine. Good one.
But it's superb.
Family-sized desktop charger. Darren's actually going away to, if you know where he lives, then Burgley's house. But he's going to, he's going on holiday. And he said, I'm just going to Turkey. I'm going to take that with me, because that'll do everyone's phone and iPad while we're away. Yeah, to worry. And it's one socket, isn't it? That's it.
Correct.
It goes into a 240, yes. And you get 5 outs from it, which is superb.
That is now on its way to my house in Wolverhampton.
I was just about to click on that and go, can I get Prime on it?
Yeah. Free one-day delivery with Prime. Yes, you can, on business day.
Just, I'll do my cool thing in a second. Just talk amongst yourselves while I get this ordered. There's a good bunch of people.
Totally. There we go. That's gone. That's in the bag. Just in case they run out of stock in the next 30 seconds.
Excellent. Oh, only two left.
Hey.
Stiff shit. I've got it.
Oh, shit. I haven't pressed confirm.
Oh, no. I beat you to it. I beat you to it.
No, thanks. Complete your Prime free. Buy now. There we go.
I got. Why is there a Minecraft? I've got a Minecraft thing in here. It's mine, apparently. Oh, that's going to go. There we go. Definitely, it's gone. It's gone. I'm not having that. My cool thing is TV catch-up. I've got to say, the last 2 weeks, I've been sitting doing a heavy amount of editing of stills in the office here. And stills are kind of like, if something's on in the background, you can listen to it and then you can just watch the replay. You can just flick down and listen if the commentary's going the right way. Blimey, I'm tired. I've been getting ready for the bash and I'm naked. I haven't been sleeping. I've been trying to watch a bit of World Cup and I've been trying to watch Wimbledon, and watching Wimbledon on the BBC online is a pain in the arse. There is nothing that works properly. It is absolute, utter and total shite. But ITV is no much better. So I started using TV Catch-Up, and TV Catch-Up is brilliant. I can't recommend it highly enough. And if you get yourself a proxy tunnel, I'm sure you can use it in the US to watch BBC and ITV and all the stuff that's on live. It's all on there. There's loads and loads of channels, all the free-to-air stuff that's on, and I can't fault it. It's brill. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Bouchotts?
Probably the easiest thing to do is to go to www.bartb.ie, where you'll find links to anything I get up to, including the Let's Talk podcasts, the password doohickey generator that I can't remember the name of because it's obviously far too late in the evening, XKPassWD, that's the thing I do, and my Flickr photos and anything else really. So bartb.ie.
Bartb.ie. Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Anchor charger ordered. Terry, where are you, mate?
I am between websites at the moment, so you can catch me on Twitter at Terry_CY. And I need to start tweeting more. I've gotten out of the Twittery tweeting habit.
I live on Twitter, mate. It's my preference.
It is fun. I just haven't been on properly for such a long time. I only use it to abuse companies at the moment. So yes, I will use it for good. Please follow me.
Excellent, mates. So you should. You can get Ben at Ben Rothig, BenRoethig, on Twitter, and he'll point you wherever else he is as well. And Gaz, where are you, sir?
Gazmaz.com, which needs a little bit of updating, actually, but Gazmaz on Twitter. Also do a weekly podcast with a guy called Guy Searle. We call ourselves G-Men over at the MyMac.com podcast.
Excellent. How is Mr. Scratch?
Perfectly well.
Good. Gaz, the power that you have over people. Mr. Batwinch has just ordered one of the anchor things as well as. So that's £60 straight away that's come from BTN.
I'm getting no commission.
We've got to get our Amazon account sorted. Definitely. Put the link in with our Amazon account, not everyone else's. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. It's the bash this weekend. If you haven't bought your curry ticket, there's only 3 tickets left, I'm afraid. So you better get onto it tomorrow. There's still three tickets left, though, however, for the best curry in the world. It starts at 6 o'clock at the Kismet Curry House. You won't get your ticket in time. You'll find it. B36 Kismet Curry House. It'll come up. And then the Bash is on Saturday. There's still loads of places for that. That's not a problem. We can get 200 people in the venue that we're at. So if you want to come along, come along. You can give us 25 quid on the door if you want for your ticket. I've been and bought all the booze today. We have enough booze to float the entire place. There'll be loads to dare. The food is great. There's a lady named Leanne who did the food last year, and anyone who went last year will remember the food because it was absolutely stunning. Same menu this year. We've got some beer. We've got no sponsors this year, unfortunately. It didn't come through, so we've got to pay for it all ourselves. There'll be some fun. We've got a couple of guild prizes to give away, and we've got the World Card Cutting Championship. Scarlet Neighbour is defending her title, and she's more than a little excited, I can promise you that. So we'll see you. If you can come to the Bash, get yourself over to B46 area of Birmingham, and it'll be on Saturday starting at 10 a.m, 11 a.m. Don McAllister's coming, and a whole pile of other people. Paul Wheatley will be there, Paul Wright will be there, and there'll be loads. Come and see us. Take care. Thanks for listening.